Well, welcome everyone. This is Kim Aaliyah, and I'm especially pleased to have on tonight as our guest speaker presenter, Dr. Andre Sain. Let me give Dr. Sain, he's been on these types of calls for us before, but let me give him a quick introduction. Dr. Sain is a graduate of the National College of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland, Oregon. He's also board certified in homeopathy since 1998. By the Homeopathic Academy of Naturopathic Physicians, and he's been teaching and lecturing on homeopathy since 1985. One of the main points of his clinical work is the treatment of patients who are suffering from very serious chronic diseases. And in addition to his private practice in Montreal, Canada, he's been the dean and main instructor for the postgraduate program of the Canadian Academy of Homeopathy, and that's since 1986. Dr. Sain is a much sought-after teacher, holding seminars in Canada, the United States, many of the European countries, and he's also known as a homeopathic scholar based on his in-depth studies of the works of great masters of the past and his practice of pure Hahnemannian homeopathy. He's also working on a magnum opus, a book, which hopefully we'll see very soon, on the life and practice of Adolf Lippe. He also has available on, and this is through his website, which is www.homeopathy.ca. That's his website. And on that site, you can find a 500-hour course. It's available on DVD, which is on chronic prescribing for professionals. I can tell you I personally have the course, and I've watched the whole thing, and it covers every single aspect of homeopathic practice, and as I said earlier, Dr. Sain is an incredibly erudite and accomplished scholar and practitioner of homeopathic medicine. I'd like to just share a couple of testimonials. One is I had the good opportunity to be in Montreal a few years ago where Dr. Sain was teaching one of his courses, and unfortunately at a certain point, I think it was during one of the parties there, he actually tripped, fell, I believe he landed in a swimming pool and seriously hurt his arm. He was in a bandage. He actually had a patch over his eye. And even though he was seriously ailing, believe it or not, he came the next day and proceeded to teach the entire class and even took a four-hour case. And I was astounded because it, at least to me, demonstrated that the level of commitment he has to the art and science of homeopathy. Another testimony I'd like to share is I was actually visiting with him in Montreal. He's always been very gracious whenever I've been to Canada, and he invited me to sit in and see some patients with him during the afternoon, and I was, first of all, very impressed with the level of success he achieves in his own practice, but I especially remember we were discussing a particular case or article by James Tyler Kent, and I was astounded when he knew exactly the article that I was referencing, and he knew exactly which journal it came from, and I think he even knew the date and the volume and issue of that particular journal. And I knew at that moment that I was standing in the company of somebody who has really mastered, as I said, the art and science of homeopathic medicine. Now, I wanted to mention that Dr. Sain is going to be discussing acute and chronic prescribing, and this is a preview of a course that he will be offering in Montreal from June 1st through June 7th. And if you want more information about this course, again, you can go to his website, which is www.homeopathy.ca. And once you go to that course, you can just select the little tab for live courses, and you'll find all of the information about this particular course, which again will be running from June 1st through June 7th. Let me say that this is a course for serious students of homeopathy. You could even be a practicing homeopath, but you should be very serious. This is not for people who are just interested in learning about home prescribing. This is for people who are medical doctors, chiropractors, naturopathic students, physicians, people who are serious about homeopathy, or even a layperson who, again, is really earnest and wishing to really delve deeply into the great practice of homeopathic medicine. So this is a great opportunity. Again, it's from June 1st to June 7th. If you want more information, you can go to the website www.homeopathy.ca. Andre, I want to thank you personally for being on. It's always a great pleasure, and we always enjoy having you with us.
Thank you. I can't wait to hear what I have to say.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and make you the presenter in case you have anything you'd like to show on your screen. Is that okay, Andre?
No problem.
Okay, great. So I'll go ahead and make you the presenter. And perhaps if we could just start, I'd like to get into some of the issues of various issues about homeopathic practice, but perhaps you could start by just telling us a little bit about your objectives for the course from June 1st through the 7th in Montreal.
Well, listen, let me give you a history about this course. You can see my screen right now, right?
Yeah, I can see it.
Okay, so this is last year handout, and you can see it's a 900-page handout. This year will be probably close to 1,000 pages because every year I make it better. But let me give you some history about this course. In 1922, the American Foundation for Homeopathy decided to give a postgraduate program every summer to young doctors that want to become Hahnemannian homeopath, because at that time Hahnemannian homeopathy was disappearing. So this course went on, and eventually the American Foundation for Homeopathy gave this course to the teaching arm, because that for income tax they had to divide between nonprofit and the teaching organization. So they founded the National Center for Homeopathy, which was the teaching part of the American Foundation for Homeopathy. And this course was taught every year, even through the Second World War, from 1922 until 2004. 2005, they decide to take a break because there was not enough students to take the course. And I gave this course myself from 1987 until 2004. Over the years, there was many practitioners that took this, taught this course, like well-known practitioners like Farrington and Robert and Elizabeth Wright Hubbard. So the best of the homeopath in North America were Boger were teaching this course, and I even met one of the graduates of this of this course from 1941, which was Dr. Alan Niswander, who died just a couple years ago in California. And he said that, you know, when he took the course, he was the only student in the course. So that was quite something. And his teacher was Boger, Robert, Robert, Elizabeth Wright Hubbard, anyway, McLaren, and Farrington. So, they were taught by some of the great people. Unfortunately, this course, the popularity of this course slowed down. And when the National Center stopped to give it the course in 2005, they said they will regroup to give it again in 2006. But in December 2005, they said they're not going to give this course anymore. And then we decided at the Canadian Academy to carry the flame since that time. So we're giving the course again, but it's really organized in a different way. And now we're giving it a 2.5 weeks or sometimes 3 weeks course. But the first week of the 2.5 weeks course is about essential acute and chronic prescribing. And why we call it essential is because homeopathy is simple and complex. It's simple in principle, but complex in practice. You need a lot of experience to master homeopathy. Actually, there's very, very few people that will actually master homeopathy. Really master it, you can count the people on the finger maybe of one hand, perhaps on the second hand in the whole history of homeopathy. So it's a really difficult subject to master. I remember years ago in the 1980s, I was the secretary of the Council on Homeopathic Education, and we were about maybe 8-9 physicians around the table, and we were discussing the difficulty of learning homeopathy. And I remember there was a psychiatrist, there was a cardiologist, there was a neurologist, there was a radiologist, there was a family practitioner, and there was myself just a naturopathic physician. And everybody agreed, despite their specialty in neurology, psychiatry, and cardiology, they all agree that the most difficult discipline they had to come by so far was homeopathy by far. So homeopathy, it takes a lot of dedication to be able to master it. And myself, I've learned homeopathy greatly through the writing of Hahnemann and Lippe and the earlier master. And I didn't pay too much attention to modern teacher, because over the years I realized there was a big difference in the teaching between the two approaches, the original approach versus the newer approach. And I'll give you an example, a very good example of the effectiveness of the approach of the people that actually master homeopathy, because they all, the people that have mastered homeopathy essentially have all taken the same road. P.P. Wells, which was a fantastic homeopath in the 19th century, in 1841, he was a medical doctor and he wanted to learn homeopathy. In 1841, that's the year that the Allentown Academy closed for permanently, and everybody went their way. And so he was left with no place to learn homeopathy, and he went to see Hering in Philadelphia and said, "What can I do? Because I want to go to the Allentown Academy, but now you close it." And they closed it not because it was not popular, because of bankruptcy of the investment that they had done. There was a board member that had invested the money of the academy, which was they started with quite a lot of money to start with, and he lost it on the stock market. In any case, he says, "What can I do?" Hering says, "First, learn German. Second, read the Organon, Chronic Disease, and Mathematica Pura." And that's what Wells did. And after about 43 years of practice, he said, "I have treated about 500 cases of pneumonia during his long career, 43 years. And he says, "I've never lost a single case." Now, this is quite impressive, because the mortality, the average mortality of pneumonia before the era of antibiotics was 30%. So not to have lost a single case of pneumonia over 43 years, about 500 cases, is extraordinary. So whatever he did very, very well. And this is not an exception. It's a rule among these people that have mastered homeopathy, that extraordinary success that cannot be reproduced today. Is it okay to use names? Well, let's say I'll not use names. I'll tell you.
What do you mean? Like
modern people. I don't need to use names. Last spring, I was in Reston, Virginia, and a very well-known professor homeopath, I'll say professor homeopath, came to me and says, "You know, Andre, we should join our efforts." And I say, "What do you mean?" "Well, we should work together and so on." I said, "Yeah, but you know that oil and water doesn't mix good well." And he says, "Yes, but we, you know, anyway." So I says, "You know, if you, I don't know what you do in your practice and what your student do in your practice, but if you or your student can go in and out of intensive care unit room, seeing a patient in intensive care unit, you can walk to the bed in and out with confidence and do the 10 patients in a row, walk in and out with confidence and come back a few hours later to see the result with confidence, then, and you have, out of 10 cases, you have 10 cases of success, then I say, whatever you teach is right. And then we can mix together." So I said, "Can you do that or your student do that?" I said, "I don't know, I've never tried." "Okay, never try." "Okay, what about cases of pneumonia?" "Oh, I've never seen a case of pneumonia. I don't treat patient with pneumonia." "Well, if you don't treat patients that are in acute intensive care unit, and you don't know what kind of result you can get because you never treated them, and you don't know, you don't treat patients with pneumonia because you don't see them, then we cannot know how effective is your method of treatment. However, if we go back to P.P. Wells, when he says, "I've never lost a case in 500 cases," it's totally extraordinary, totally extraordinary. So you find out that Wells learned German, read the Organon, the Chronic Disease, and Mathematica Pura, and he used these Mathematica in German all his life, despite he was an American and despite the fact that these books were eventually translated in English, because in 1841 they were not available, good copies were not available in English. So despite this, he still used the original Mathematica of Hahnemann in German throughout his career. Now, if he was able to do it, anybody can do it that is dedicated. However, today would be hard to ask somebody to learn German especially the older German, because it's so difficult, the older German, that even modern young doctors in Germany today, they understand the organum better in English than in the original German, because German language went through, I think, five changes, language changes over the last 150 years. And the word and the structure of the sentence are so different that it would be hard for them to understand clearly what Eineman meant. So that's the reason they read it in English today. So today would be harder to ask somebody to learn German and read Eineman and so on. So however, you could say to somebody, read the Organon, read Chronic Disease, good translation, and the Mathematica, and all the work of Hahnemann, and you're going to be on your way. So that's something we can ask people to do. They don't need to take this course if they do that. And on top of this, I would say, learn also all the work, the important work of the great Adamanians. If you do this, you don't need to come to this course. You're on your way to become a master of homeopathy. However, this course is for people that will be a bit leisier, a bit less dedicated than that, a bit more lazy in the sense that I have worked this out very well over the years. I have studied the material. I know what is essential and how to present it, because I've done it so many years now, how to present it, how to approach. So now I'm going to show you the different aspects of the course. See, this is the syllabus. First, we have to understand the philosophy of homeopathy and where it fits in medicine. So we spend, actually, out of 7 days, we spend about 1 day to look at medicine in general. And when we say medicine in general, we talk about I do have an outline for that. I can see the outline. Let me see if I can find the outline. Philosophy, page 15. So you see, we look at the scope of medicine, the definition of a physician, and then we go into disease to understand really well what disease and healing and the cause of disease and what is the causa occasionalis, the attunement of the vital force, what is the meaning of that, all the factors related to the cause of disease. This needs to be 100% well understood in order to understand what you're going to try the third paragraph of the article says you have to understand what needs to be cured. So this is very important to understand. Learning all the different interventions. So we spend about a day on all these subjects and the place of hygiene in homeopathy, which was a very very dear subject to Hahnemann and also very dear subject to Carol Dunham and Pierre Schmidt. Unfortunately, not most homeopaths today don't pay attention to that, and that's not right. And then we go into the principle of classical medicine. We'll skip this. And all what is required of the physician. And then we go into what is homeopathy. And then eventually, so this is all the philosophy. And then we spend about, like I say, a day and a half to 2 days on this out of the 7 days. Once we have done, we understand what is homeopathy, where it's placed, where is the place of hygiene, where is the place of all the different other therapy, and what is disease, how to approach it, and so on. Then we go into how to study the Mathematica. And this can be complicated because Hahnemann wanted the Mathematica to be pure. Unfortunately, people after him didn't make it pure. They make it impure again. So again, we go back to the Mathematica pura, and we show you how to study the Mathematica. And we give example, and we do some differential Mathematica. After that, we go over the essential of case taking. When I do a class on case taking, it takes about 10 days. But I over here in a few hours, maybe 3 hours, I go over the essential point. I summarize it. As like it is in the Organon is the blueprint of the principle and practice of homeopathy, but it's not the detail. Hahnemann says, oh, you do this, but it doesn't tell you all the little detail. Same thing here. I'll go over the main points so you understand what are the main points, where you don't, what kind of mistake you don't want to do, and what you want to do. Afterwards, we go over case analysis, and that can be a bit complicated, but I do summarize it very well, and we do give case example. Finally, but after we have learned these three steps, we go over two life cases. So typically what I do, I take patients that I've never seen before, and they have a chronic disease, usually an autoimmune disease, and I take the case and we analyze it in class. Students have to go home that night. They go back to their dorms, and they study the case, and they have to do it. They can do it in group, but everybody have to come back next day with what I call the genus of the disease. And then we discuss it in length and in detail in class. This is probably the heart of the whole class, to see if all what we have done in the last few days came to fruit. And then we discuss how to administer the remedy, how to do a follow-up, how to the decision for the second prescription. And then if we have time, we do some paper case. And this can be interesting. Most people that took this class took this class in the past, they say the class is too short. We don't have enough time to do paper case. So what we decided to do a few years ago, we decided to give 5 days that follows this class of case analysis and case management, just cases. All day we do cases and we discuss about to analyze the case and how to manage it. And also we do a live case also in this class. So here we have a class syllabus where here you have the recommended books and resources. And then we go over the philosophy of homeopathy and the cause of disease with all articles to substantiate the information that I leave the students to read eventually. And then we go into the heart of homeopathy, like the pure homeopathy. And there we have here some of the best article on homeopathy. Let me see if I can find them. There's many here. There's lots of a very key article that I want students to read. Well, here there's many here. All of these are very, very important article about. Actually, there's some that I don't see right now. I'm not sure. Some about pure homeopathy. Maybe it's a bit early in the syllabus. In any case, if they were not there in 2012, they will be there in 2013 for sure. No, they must be there. They're here. You see these article here. Pure homeopathy defined by Brownwell. Very long article actually. You see it's 21 page. Pure homeopathy by Clausen. Pure homeopathy by Guernsey, and so on. So we really go at the heart of pure homeopathy, which is not easy to understand. I'll tell you why. Because there's too many voices out there saying what it's homeopathy. They're claiming what is homeopathy. And it's very, very few of it have taken the time to study and understand pure homeopathy. Very, very few have took the time to go and study Hahnemann and all the other men to really understand it and to be able to deliver the goods like the people, like the great homeopaths of the 19th century. So why it's difficult is because there's too many voices. If we were kept only with a Hahnemann, like hearing when he learned homeopathy, there was one voice, was Hahnemann. Benninghausen, when he started homeopathy, it was one voice, Hahnemann. When Lippe started, there was the voice of Hahnemann, and then it was also the voice of Lippe and Benninghausen, hearing and Benninghausen. So they were all pure homeopathy. But eventually there were many professed teachers, and they start to dilute the material, and today the material is so diluted that most of it cannot be called genuine homeopathy anymore. Is there any question you would like to ask Kim about what I've presented so far, or perhaps
let me ask you a question. I'd like to ask you some just general questions about practice and some of the history of homeopathy. But before I do that, what could somebody expect to come away with if they take this course? I mean, will they be able to go out and start prescribing, or what is your objective for the students of the class?
No, if somebody is already in practice, like we had people that have been practicing, like we have had people that took this course that took the IFH course from the 1990s, okay? And they're in practice for 20, 25 years, and they took this course, and they say, well, I've learned more here to know how to practice homeopathy than all my training before, because never they were told about pure homeopathy. They were told about, in quote-unquote, classical homeopathy, But classical homeopathy has nothing to do with pure homeopathy. Classical homeopathy is people call what they think is classical, which is likely not classical, while pure homeopathy, genuine homeopathy, is really the homeopathy of Hahnemann. Hahnemann called it pure homeopathy or genuine homeopathy for some reason, because it has to be genuine and pure as he developed it over many, many years very meticulously. So it has nothing to do with classical homeopathy. It is pure Hahnemannian genuine homeopathy. And this you will have difficulty to get elsewhere unless you just restrict yourself to learn it, not from classical order, but from Hahnemannian authors. So what somebody can get out of the class, if you're already a practitioner, you will know right away what you're not doing right. You will know right away. Coming out of the course, you will say, oh, I've done this wrong for so many years, I can't believe it. So that would be one thing. And then you will know, second, what you need to do next. If you're not a practitioner yet, you're just a student and you intend to go forward, these are the best people to take this course to some degree because they have not been spoiled yet. So they will not need to get rid of bad ideas and a bad way of practice and not try to forget. They will only try to learn. So, but both will get as much. This course is not for beginner and it's not for advanced. It's for anybody that wants, is serious and wants to master homeopathy, period. So if you're serious and you want to master homeopathy, either you do you follow the track of Herring and Lippe and Wells the way they did it by studying meticulously the work of Hahnemann word for word and step by step and learning after that from themselves like Guernsey and Herring and so on, or you take a course like this. I don't say you need to take my course, but you take a course where it will be restricted to pure Hahnemannian homeopathy and give you the best of what exists out there in pure Hahnemannian homeopathy. So if you're a practitioner, you'll see go back and practice, and you'll start to practice differently. You'll start to take your case differently. You'll analyze your case differently. You'll choose remedy differently. You'll study the Mathematica differently, and you will practice differently. Let me give you just an example of how different it is. We all understand that the most similar remedy that must be found must be most similar to the totality of the characteristic symptom of the disease being treated. So this we understand, it's all over the Argonon. So this totality of the most characteristic symptom, it was called by Guernsey the genius of the remedy. Let's see if we can find him here. Yeah, the genius, okay? The genius of our remedy. And that's what we do. We teach how to identify the genius of the remedy or the disease of the patient and then try to find the genius of the remedy in the Mathematica. So we work by genius. And we have developed a group in the last more or less 2 years, but it's actually more in the last like 8 years, a working group to to update our Mathematica and develop those genius. Let me give you an example of a genius of a remedy. And well, we can go on our website. It's easy to do. If you go on the website on the Academy, well, that's where you'll see the thing about the course, the essential, that I think you have it already at this page there. But you'll notice there's the ad here or the notice for an announcement for the Mathematica project. And if you go on this webpage, you'll see the description of the Mathematica project and how we work with genius. Let me see if we can find the word genius here. We should be able to find this. Yeah, I see. The work coming in the presentation of the genius of each remedy. So here we teach case analysis, but analysis towards the genius and identification of the remedy to the genius. And if you want to understand what it looks like a genius, I give two examples here, like Quassa Amara and Trillium Pendulum. And you can press on it, and you'll see the text appearing of these genius. And I don't want to do it now, but you can do it on your own. People will understand how to better understand the Mathematica, better understand the disease of patient, better understand what to look for and how to create a genius, and better how to understand the genius in the Mathematica. Kim?
Yeah, Andre, I didn't know that you were. Okay, so, I personally would like to come to the course. Unfortunately, I won't be able to be there. I know Dr. Messer, for example, who's the head of the homeopathy department at the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine, has personally raved to me about the class and the value that he's personally gotten out of it. So it shows you if somebody who of his level of practice can benefit from your course, that it's of tremendous importance for as a contribution for really providing pure and good homeopathy. You mentioned earlier, Andre, Phineas Parkhurst Wells and his great success in the treatment of pneumonia. And I thought perhaps you could share a little bit about, I know that you're writing this book on Adolf Lippe, and Lippe has also been extremely successful. I know that he treated many, many cases of typhoid, cholera, and malaria, and I believe he had tremendous success. Could you speak a little bit about that, his tremendous success during a period of time when the mortality rate of these diseases was rather high, and also maybe a little bit about Thomas Lindsay Bradford's Law of Figures, where he documents the great efficacy of homeopathic practice in the treatment of epidemic diseases during that period?
Well, you know, when I was at the National College of Naturopathic Medicine, I used to spend I would go to the library, which was a very good library, especially of the old journal, the proceeding and the transaction of the meeting of the that was occurring at of the Animanian Association, let's say, and I would read there during my breaks, and I noticed that the information that was contained there was very solid, and the results were extraordinary. And so after some years of looking through that, you know, like in 1981, I started to do photocopying from the library the best article, and I would classify them by author or subject. And after maybe 6-7 years of doing this, and I went to the University of San Francisco on a regular basis to do this, I realized that all was converging, all the great homeopaths were they were converging towards one person aside from Hahnemann, which was Lippe, Adolf Lippe, the father. And I was, they would always praise him and how great of a practitioner he is and so on. So in 1988, I decided to start to collect the work of Lippe and start to publish it as a book. So I've been working on it since that time because it's quite elaborate work. Let me just see. I'll show you the work a bit. Adolf Lippe.
When do you expect to have this ready for publication, Andre?
Ask me this question in a few minutes if I don't answer it. So here is the work, and let me see. I'll show the work. So the work is divided in two parts. One is a biography, but the biography is mostly centered around this: what made Lippe such a phenomenal prescriber? And then how did he achieve that? So I go over more or less, not so much where he was born is not important. Is why, what did he do? How did he do it? How can we learn from it? So that's the first part of the book, which would be about 800 pages. Right now it's only 560 because that's the part I've not completed yet. I'm finishing this part right now. Like I'm doing the last reading of this part. I'm about here right now, about page 600. Reviewing for the last draft of this, and this is the best of his writing. And you can see, you can appreciate here, let's say on case analysis, there's almost 80 pages on case analysis. There is 74 pages on just pathology, 150 pages about, or 40 pages on clinical case and so on. So it's quite interesting, and it's probably the best that exists in homeopathy is this. Once you've read this and you read the work of Hahnemann, you don't need to go elsewhere. What I do is I make a lot of annotation, and I explain what Lippe is saying at times because people don't know the context. This is only 800 pages of his writing, but he wrote for, I think I have 3,600 pages of his writing. So I'm just taking a sample of his writing. I'm taking the best, and I'm explaining it in detail, so people will understand not only what he meant, but all the intricacy about, let's say, posology. So there's no doubt in people's mind how to choose the posology and how to use it. Let me see. I was going to show you. Yeah, let me just show you something about the phenomenal prescriber.
By the way, while you're doing that, I want to mention to people that you can type in questions in the dialog box on the right-hand side, and time permitting, I will relay those questions to Dr. Singh for him to answer. So
here is the part of the chapter where it says the phenomenal prescriber. It says, Lippe was recognized as the best prescriber homeopathy ever had. His name came to be known as the highest standard of practice. This is it, the highest standard of practice. There's nothing higher since that time, as seen in this expression of Nash. The result was all a Lippe could desire. His track record is almost unbelievable. Actually, Walter James, who practiced with Lippe for 15 years, was a student from the Homeopathic Medical College of Pennsylvania, but is also an associate in his practice. And when Lippe was sick or died, Walter James took over the practice. But he was right there in this practice, and Lippe was successful beyond belief. So if somebody is close by and he was watching, he says it's beyond belief. And the extraordinary clerical success he obtained confirmed the teaching of Hahnemann and provide great authority. This is the important aspect. If he was so good, you have to pay attention to what he's saying, because it gives authority to his writing and his work. Among Hahnemanns, whether it was Allen or Herring or Berridge or Dunham or Skinner or Weselhoff or Nash, etc., or Boger, they all point to Lippe as the greatest of all master of homeopathy. Actually, if you look at Allen, he wrote the following, H.C. Allen. He says, Lippe was known wherever the name of our school is known, and probably no member in our school was ever more honored or held in higher esteem for his ability as a close and accurate prescriber. In this particular, he was simply wonderful, and the faculty with which he grasped the salient point, this is very important. To understand this, how to grasp the salient point, the unique, peculiar, or uncommon point of the case, and fit it his remedy in this characteristic way, has not been surpassed by any man in our school since the days of Hahnemann, and I doubt if the later could do as well. And he's correct. His wonderful knowledge of the characteristic symptom of our Materia Medica, and no man excel him in this, enable him to grasp this particular feature and cure case in which perhaps is superior in other department at sale, etc. But I'll give you an example of some success. I'll just go over one. An allopath challenged Lippe and other homeopaths to show results. And Lippe says, and result, Lippe delivered the goods throughout his long and successful career. The literature is full of anecdotes illustrating his great success. One of the first ones to be found relates to a very severe epidemic of malignant scarlet fever, which raged in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, 1849. Lippe reported that few survive under ordinary medical system. The victims were mainly the very young children. The mortality under strict homeopathic treatment amounted to nil, while the allopathic physician had a mortality of at least 90%. I'll go a bit further. I think I got a quote of him. It's better. Yeah, he says, now I shall take occasion to state, not boastfully, that in the year 1849, they were treated by myself in the town of Carlisle, over 150 cases of scarlet, actually it's malignant scarlet fever, with a 200 and higher potency exclusively, mortality none. The allopaths lost over 90% of their, and the survivor were crippled for life. In other words, they had brain damage or heart damage or kidney damage. If this man, okay, and so on. So this is quite extraordinary, because today, if there was an epidemic of malignant scarlet fever, I think in 1996 in India, and the people were treated in the hospital in India with antibiotics and so on, and guess what the mortality was? 90% mortality. So the mortality has not changed then or today, but to have treated 150 cases without mortality, this is extraordinary. This is total beyond belief. And that's what Walter James says. It's beyond belief. So therefore, whatever he did, those other men did it right. And it's a very, very fine line to walk on that that path. And if you do it on your own, you can do it. You can achieve it. But you'll have to be very disciplined and restricting your reading to Hahnemann and the pure Hahnemannian homeopaths. If you're restricted to that, you will reach promised land, but you'll have to work hard. The advantage of the course is we just put it together for you. We have it already. It's already done for you, and you can learn from that. The other question you asked me, Kim, is about the other publication, which is The Weight of Evidence, which is the review of the literature on the results of homeopathy in times of epidemic. And let me show you a bit the work for a second. Okay, so far I have collected 7,000 references for this work. And I have looked at all the epidemic disease in which homeopathy has been involved since 1797, since the epidemic of scarlet fever Hahnemann was involved in. And I have looked at not only epidemic disease, but also at official reports from prisons and asylum, from especially from the state of New York, from orphanage, result in obstetrics, especially in terms of neonatal mortality or maternal mortality, and comparative result from insurance company, and comparative result from major cities, from Board of Health. So it's quite comprehensive. If you pay attention, the book is over 2,000 pages. You'll see at the bottom of the page here, it will go to 2,000, over 2,000 pages. And you'll notice also that if I stop the place anywhere, you'll see we're on page 1940 here, and it's referenced 2085. So in other words, there's more reference than there are pages. Now, and I have five or six more, 5,000 other references that have not been put in this work yet. They have not been integrated. Sorry, that's the word I was looking. They have not been integrated into this work. In other words, the work will be quite complete in terms of what homeopathy has achieved over those years. And it's very interesting because about 10 days ago, I was in a debate at the University of Connecticut about whether homeopathy is great medicine or it's a dangerous pseudoscience. And here, I'll show you again. I'll show you the debate link here. It is March 22nd. You see this here. Actually, tomorrow there will be a new web page for that. But you'll see this is the debate that I was in on March 22nd, just 10 days ago. And after the debate, there are questions that will go on between me and my opponent. And here's the question. So I ask a question. It's a quite a long question, my question. And he asked me a question too, and I will answer his question, and he will answer it, and we'll go like this for 1 year. But why I'm showing you this is to show that the greatest evidence that we have about the effectiveness of homeopathy has never been used to demonstrate to show to the skeptics that homeopathy is effective. So I'm going to use my understanding or my knowledge of epidemics to show that observational studies or report case report or court studies that we have in homeopathy, we have by the thousands that all they are actually a high quality of evidence when you take it as a mass, and the fact that there's so much consistency. So it would be a really great debate that will go on now. You can watch the debate right here. See, you have the link here to the debate if you want to watch the debate on the web. But if you only want to read the question and answer, we will not go on with the debate right now. But if you go to the question and answer, it will be very interesting to follow the debate about this. So the work that I did with the epidemics will be very useful to show that homeopathy has a great bank of evidence that is almost you cannot argue about. It's almost like you cannot argue against it, the value of this evidence. But the point is, you have to find a way to show that this evidence is very has a very high quality of evidence. Yes, Kim.
Andre, one of the great testimonies to the efficacy of really pure Hahnemannian homeopathy is the story surrounding the Homeopathic Medical College of Pennsylvania when Lippe took it over between 1864 and 1869. And my understanding, at least, is that the practitioners who graduated during that period, when you look at the record in the documented journals, were really some of the best, if not the best, practitioners. Could you speak a little bit about that? Because I think that really speaks to the need for really good homeopathic education.
Well, that's an interesting thing. Lippe and Herring participate in obtaining a charter for the Homeopathic Medical College of Pennsylvania, but they were not hired as teacher, eventually the school became almost bankrupt, and Lippe and Herring and Guernsey decided to start to teach. And they developed a very good program. There were really three great teachers, and it went on like this for about 5 years, and then they split because of a conflict. But if you look at the graduates from those years, or some of the best came out from those years, but not only. You take a person like Yingling. He was a great practitioner, and he learned homeopathy, he says, because he graduated from, I think, the Kansas School of Homeopathy, which is, he had not learned much. He learned how to use combination remedy and low potency and many remedy at the same time, and not learn how to take a case. And he says he learned homeopathy by reading the homeopathic physician and reading the article of Lippe. And that's how he became a good homeopath. So it's not just by going to that school, but when people were associated with Lippe, you take Allen, H.C. Allen, or Nash. They're both graduates from the Cleveland Homeopathic Medical College. And they say both. They say, we never heard about the Organon while we were in school. But both, they say Lippe put them on the right track. Allen was, Lippe had mentioned in the 70s that he treated patients with diphtheria without a loss. Allen couldn't believe it. He says, impossible, you don't lose patients with diphtheria. The mortality is between 30 and 40%. How can you not lose a case? It's impossible. So he went to see Lippe, and he realized that Lippe had extraordinary success. There was nothing close to what he was having. At that time, he was using low potency, multiple remedy, and didn't even know about the Organon. So Lippe put him on the right track. He started to study the Organon and started to practice, and H. Allen became a great practitioner. He didn't go to that school. He just learned the right track. Same thing with Nash. Nash came out of the same school as H.C. Allen, and he was not such a good practitioner, but again, it's Lippe that put him on the right track. And then look at the beauty of the work of Nash. So there's a path there. It's already the path is already designed and so on. It's just for you to follow it to know what is the path, which I told you already, is to study the work of Hahnemann and the other men and forget about all the other teachers. All the classical teachers, forget about that. These are sirens that will try to attract you and will divert you from your path and will help you to actually reach the reef. That's why this course, it's really, really for people that are serious to become a master. They are dedicated. They have the time, the energy, the health to do it, and they just need to be put on the right track. So that's why this course is. So we're not trying to attract masses. We try to give a word to people that really are of that, those people that really want to master homeopathy to come to this course. Two more things. Here, a quote from about prophylaxis, homeopathic prophylaxis, but you could apply that to homeotherapy also, to the treatment. Here he says, all facts relate to homeopathic prophylaxis should be carefully and conscientiously collected and published. Such work will most assuredly exercise a wholesome influence on science and on the practice of medicine, and thus benefit suffering humanity. So if we go just beyond homeoprophylaxis, we just say homeopathy, the gold mine that is homeopathy, people don't have a clue of the value of homeopathy. Even most homeopaths don't have a clue of the value of homeopathy. So that's why this work is so important. Yes, Kim.
Fantastic. So, let me just make a point. So there's been some questions about the course and some questions about clarification. So let me just say one of the questions, this is not an online course. It's a course that's in Montreal from June 1st through June 7th for serious students and practitioners of homeopathy. As in terms of, some people have also asked how it differs from the 500-hour course. It's obviously a much shorter course. How many hours in total is it?
It's 7 days, 6 hours a day, or sometimes it's a bit more, maybe 6 and a half.
So it's less than 1/10 of the 500 course. I personally have that 500-hour course, and it's extremely comprehensive.
You know what? I'll tell you something interesting. People come for this course, and sometimes they say, what can I do next? I say, well, if you want to take the 500 course, do it. So some people do it. Some other people actually come to this course after having completed the 500 course. Why? Because they want to put things together. So this will put things really together better. And it's very interesting because if people take the essential, they can come free following years. Many people have taken two times, and some have taken three times. And I think there's one person maybe took it four times over the last 13 years. So people come back for refresher because just they have more questions. And it's very interesting because you learn homeopathy by stages. You cannot learn at once. If you read the Argonaut one time, you don't understand it because it's too complex. You need too much knowledge and clinical experience to understand many, many of the complexity of the Argonaut. And that's why Lippe said, I have, after about 50 years of practice, actually I think it was 48 years of practice, he said, I have so far read the Argonaut over 100 times, and that's about 50 years now, and I'm just starting to comprehend it. So after I say 48 years of practice, but you know, you had learned homeopathy a bit before, so more or less 50 years of study, 50 years after beginning studying homeopathy, he says, I have read the Argonaut over 100 times, and I'm just comprehending it. So that's why people come to the refresher of the essential course. So it doesn't matter if you have read you've done the 500 course before or after. It's always a course that is important. It says essential. It is essential. And every year I make the course a bit better because I bring more new information, new articles, and so on. So like this year, I know we're going to have three students are coming for refresher, and one of the students is going to be her third time or fourth time. And she took the course in the 1980s. Imagine. She took it in the 80s, she took it in the 90s, and I think she's going to take it in the 2000 now. So so people need the class to get things a bit more clear, and they ask questions because it's difficult. Homeopathy is a difficult subject, even though that the concepts are clear. It's just that the complexity in practice in terms of every person being an individual, every person could bring together all kinds of different information that will surprise the practitioner at times. You need to have principle to deal with this, and there's always like footnotes you have to add to teaching, and you cannot put all the footnotes, but the student can come with question, and then we can discuss it and analyze it and to put it in the perspective of pure homeopathy.
Very good. Andre, we don't have too much time, but we've only got about 5-6 minutes left, but there have been actually a number of questions. I'm sorry, I'm going to apologize ahead of time because we're not going to be able to get to everybody's questions. There are currently about 150 people on the call, so it won't be possible to address everybody's queries, but there have been a number of questions here about posology, and specifically about the people who use the term LM, that's a misnomer, so I'm going to use the 50 millesimal potencies. And specifically, I'm going to add a little bit to this. In the Organon, in Aphorism 247, Hahnemann basically says it is an unexecutable project to repeat the same remedy in the same potency once, let alone many times, unless, of course, you've changed the dilution between each dose. Can you speak to this a little bit? Because it's a question that many people have, and there are certain teachers out there who are advocating using the 50 millesimal potency. Some people are advocating use the C. Some people say, well, if you're going to use the C, you got to make sure you put it in water and succuss it in between. This is what Hahnemann did in his later years. Can you speak quickly to this whole topic?
Yeah, I have actually a whole chapter on this in the Lipi, but maybe it'll be too long to find it. Let's put it this way. Hahnemann developed the 50 millesimal potency in January 1841. That's the first time he used it, and the last time he used it was in March 1843. So he used it for 26 months with about, and not all his remedies were in the 50 millesimal. So he used only the remedy that he had made. So maybe only half of the remedy he would prescribe, maybe it would be a maximum of maybe 20 remedies. Maybe 20 remedies were in the 50 millesimal and the other ones were in the C potency. Just before going to the 50 millesimal, Hahnemann was using systematically the 200 potency. And so he does not have a long experience. It's the experience of one man for 26 months with about 20 remedies, and the highest millesimal I think he had was sulfur, and maybe it was about LM20. I would have to check on that, but it's not in the 30, certainly not in the 30. So it was still quite a low potency. However, the 19th century homeopaths, Hahnemann homeopaths like Lippe, Hering, Wells, and so on, had fantastic results. You don't need to improve those results. They're fantastic, and they did not use the 50 millesimal. So is the 50 millesimal a real improvement over the higher potency that was developed later? I doubt it. I doubt it because when you treat people with very serious acute disease or very serious chronic disease, you will need to go eventually to the higher and highest potency. And like, for instance, we often use in our office the Finkies, and we use like the CM, DM, MM, and after that we go beyond that. We go like unbelievable high potency. And it would be hard to conceive that you could treat somebody with a very, very serious condition for a very long time only with the LMs. It's possible, but it would be more difficult. And I would say, like Nash, the idea with potency is has to be individualized to each patient, and each practitioner must know how to use the lowest potency, let's say LMs or low potency, to the highest potency, a HMM, Finke, 45H. So that's incredibly high potency. So so to use the lowest to the highest, to know how to repeat the remedy and how to administer the remedy, this is all must be individualized to each patient. I was going to ask you, Kim, can you ask the attendees a question and they will raise their hands to see their answer, or you cannot do that on this presentation?
Yes, you can. I can see. Hold on a second. Hold on. What question would you like me to ask them?
How many of the listeners tonight would like, that's the first question, it would be a serious question, so they would have to put their hands up, and then you count them, and then we put them down. How many people would like to master homeopathy, really become a master of the
okay. Okay, so let me just say, everyone, that they're in your control panel. You can see there's a little hand. Yeah, I see. Okay, let me count them now. You got, there's a little place where you can click on the little hand to raise your hand next to your name. So I don't know if anybody knows how to do this. Not everybody necessarily knows how to do this. But I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8,
about, give me a number, 9, about.
11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Okay, there's about 80 hands up, but of course some people may not know how to raise their hands. They're
but
not familiar
let's
enough.
Let's assume 100 of the 139 listener would like to become a master of homeopathy, right?
I think that's a fair assumption. We can make that assumption.
Okay, very good. High confidence level on the interval. Okay, very good. Let's put it this way. How many of the 100 that raised their hand, everybody put your hand down now. How many of the 100 you think you have the energy, the dedication, and the will to do it.
Okay, go ahead and click on your...
And the time, and the time to do it, because it takes many years of hard work.
Okay. So 45 I got. So
okay.
About half. Half
so,
the number.
In that way, we drop by half about. And now half don't have the time, the energy, the will, or the health to do it. Okay, so of the 45 that are there, you know, perhaps only one of the 45 will become master. You know why? Because people will drop out right and left like it's been done before, because I've seen it all the time. I ask this question. I've asked this question for 20 years in class or more, since 87. So now it's 25 years. 26 years will be the summer. I ask this question, how many want to master Mayavi? Usually we have half the class raise their hand, and then I say, how many think you will have the energy and the will? Oh, it drops to very little. And how many think they will reach? So now a third question, how many think they will be master on the Mayavi in 20 years from now?
So it's 25 hands up.
Okay, so we drop another F just by thinking. So so we have 25 future potential master in your group, Kim. So of those 25, I would say if you're really interested, you know what to do in terms of what you need to study. If you feel you need help to do this, come to the class. That's a way of doing it. Or you can do it on your own, because you don't need to come to this class. Leapy never came to this class, and Herring never came to this class, and Wells or Allen or Nash never came to this class. However, they were surrounded with people, and they had limited access to some books and teachers, so that's how they were able to walk on that fine path without drifting. So if you think you would
like everything else in life, persistence is tantamount to success.
Pardon?
Persistence. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence.
Yeah, persistence. But you need to have the will, you know, the will to do it, but also you need to know how to do it. Because
yeah,
you can have
yeah.
the will, but you'll hit the wall. But if you know,
I agree.
If you have a map and the will, you will reach a promised land. However, the history of homeopathy shows very, very few people have done that. Why? Because it takes a lot of work, a lot of dedication, and a map, a real good map. And that's what made Lippe so good. Lippe, how he started, he was in Germany, and he read Hahnemann and says, Hahnemann says, do it exactly as I do it. And what Lippe says, he says, I'm going to do it exactly as he says, to the word. And it worked.
Andre, I want to thank you. Unfortunately, we're out of time. It's always a pleasure to have you on, sharing all of your experience. But before we leave, when will your Lippe book be available?
Okay, I'll show you. If you go on our website here, I'm doing a fundraising campaign starting more or less now for $1.9 million. So if we're able to do, we raise that money, we would do a research project on rabies that I'm trying to work with a few universities right now in homeopathy, because if we do this clinical project with rabies, with rabid animals, and we have success, I mean, this will put homeopathy on the map in a great way. The reactivation of the IHA, the completion of our mathematical project, which we have now about 45 people working on this project right now, the completion of the weight of evidence and the Lippe book. If we raise that amount of money, I would be able, with two assistants, to complete Lippe in 1 year. I would be able to complete the second book with two assistants in a matter of 2 years, so there will be 3 years for that. And the other project which is working at a good speed right now, this Mathematica project. However, it would move much, much faster, so we would be able to have completion of our 550 remedies faster. So far, we have done about 150 remedies. We calculated that we need 27,000 hours to complete this work. That's why it's a very, very demanding work. And then the two other projects of the reactivation of the IHA. So when it'll depend of right now I'm working very slowly on this because I have my practice and I have other projects and I'm teaching. However, if we're able to raise the money, which I think we will be able to raise, because right now our goal is 1.9 million and already we have up to 400,000 for the next 4 years. This is 1.9 over 4 years, and we have found a bit more than 20%. So we need to reach another 80%, and we will be very successful in doing this work. So LIPE 1 year, the wait 2 years, and the mathematical project would progress much, much faster. Maybe 5 years we would be completed. That means our repertory would be greatly updated, and the mathematical would be fantastic because it will be especially summarized by Genius, which will be facilitate the work for a busy practitioner.
All right. Well, Andre, thank you very much. We definitely are out of time, but I want to thank you again. It's been an excellent call, lots of useful, valuable information. I love your passion, and I hope you'll join us again for a future call.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Okay, and thank you everybody for participating and your good questions. Sorry we couldn't get to all of them, but I'm sure we'll have Dr. Sane back on in the future. Have a good night, everyone.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. Good night, everyone.